So I'm going to introduce you to an Ananda tradition, which is a silent meditation, but we will do it for about 3 minutes together, and then your lovely musician back there is going to bring us out of it with some music. So let's sit upright and take a couple of deep breaths. In and out, nice, deep, long breaths. Feel your shoulders relaxing and your whole body coming to a place of stillness. Focus your attention at the point between the eyebrows. That's the Christ Consciousness Center, the center of light in the body. It's all about coming home. So let's sit for a few moments in the silence of home, inwardly offering ourselves to Christ and God. Thank you. My name is Jamuna. I have known Kevin Hart for many, many years, and I get to see him maybe two or three times a year. We maybe make that more this year, the rest of this year. I want to talk about a serious subject, and I hope I can make it understandable to you. I have been challenged this year with a gift from God, and that is that my twin sister is disappearing into Alzheimer's. And in fact, the reason I'm not dressed in my ministerial robes this morning is because my friend Celeste Sophia is going to take me right to the ferry terminal. I'm going to go to Bainbridge Island for a few days to be with her and her husband. But it has given me an opportunity to really experience the teachings that I've been a part of for about 50 years. And this is that God is with us. God is within us. God is present if only we would listen. And I've become a great fan of a little book that I've had many editions of because I keep either losing it or giving it away, and it's called Dear God, Children's Letters to God. And the reason I love this book, how many of you know this? Do you know this one? It's really quite wonderful. The man, this edition that I picked up, I just enjoyed these. I didn't know this man was very serious about them, and it reflects in the letters that he publishes. But he's very serious about this understanding of that natural, childlike approach to this great subject. And so he's very careful about how he asks the teachers to request from the students letters. And so I'm just going to share a few. Dear God, why did you make it so there's always two sides to things? Good guys and bad guys, East and West. We are all the same, aren't we? That's a very profound question. Because as the Eastern teachings tell us, life is all about ups and downs. Life is all about a journey of the darks and the lights. So things happen that please us and give us great joy and satisfaction. And what do you know, we turn around the next day and something just stabs at us and takes our heart away and causes us great pain. And this is the journey that we're on. So that child kind of tuned into that very, very early. And I remember in my childhood having this thought that I really wanted to be grown up pretty fast. I wanted to be a grown-up. Because what a grown-up meant to me was that you had it made, you know. You'd figured it out and you'd found this level plateau, isn't that so? So to be a grown-up meant there was this plateau and you could just maneuver life happily from there. I don't know why I thought that, but that's what I had in mind, and I saw that it wasn't really so, but that didn't bother me, because when I got there, that's what it was going to be like. So Yogananda tells us that an easy life is not the kind of life we should wish for, that the deeper life is the victorious life, the life that gives us those opportunities to overcome and to grow and to become stronger. And another way of looking at the nature of life is looking at it like a chess or checkerboard, you know, the dark squares and the light squares. And over the years, I've put my mind to this and I've tried to create a board game with the darks and the lights. So I got the board game laid out, you know, the good things, the bad things, you know, every other one. But what I couldn't figure out was how we could, you know, create the dice or something to propel us along. You know, how we could get the idea of karma, because some of us have things that happen in our lives that we feel, gosh, I'm not really deserving of this. And then we understand it's the lives that we've lived, and it's the good that we've done, and it's the sacrifices that we have made already that produces this kind of experience. So I've played with this game idea for about 10 years and have never got it happening. And I've even handed it out to people and say, can you see, you know, how we can get the motivating force, how it is that we get us to move on these squares. So that's just an aside there. We need a desire card, you know, probably need a little desire card. I want this or I want that. That's probably what moves us. But finally, you know, where we really begin to walk the path is when we realize that this life is a great play and that it has a master director who is more than willing to coach us and to guide us in how to play the parts. And so we sort of get that, and then we say, well, I don't like that. I want to stand on my own 2 feet. I want to do it my way. We have lots of lifetimes doing it that way, lots of lifetimes, until we realize, well, we just don't get it. You know, it's just sort of interesting that when you are interested in learning how to do something, you go to a master, or you go to a master chef to learn how to cook. You know, you go to a master builder to learn how to build. You go to all these masters to learn how to... But we don't like to think that we need to learn how to live. But we do, because life, it's not fair. You know, in fact, Yogananda said, he would say to God, why did you do it this way? This isn't right. This isn't fair. And he got no answer whatsoever. So he said, all that's left is that we do the best we can. So Yogananda had a prayer that he suggested. Let me read it to you. Open thy lips of silence and whisper constant guiding thoughts to my soul. And what happens eventually is that there comes a time when something very difficult is in front of you. And this is the experience that I had this summer in a particular moment in my sister's home. It's devastating to watch this happen. It's devastating to watch a mind go. And it's devastating to watch her suffering even more. And suddenly I had the experience of being joyful and in the midst of that suffering at the same time. I had heard that this was possible, but I hadn't experienced it. And when I experienced it, it was incredibly profound for me. It made me realize that what we're doing here is searching for that joy which resides within. We are creating that temple within ourselves where God's voice can be heard most clearly. And he will speak. And he will speak in the most intimate, personal, just to you. There's a wonderful story about Louis Zamperini. And I think a book came out, and maybe even a movie, I'm not sure about that. But he was an Olympic runner, and he was in the Olympics in 1936, and he was a great runner, and he had persevered over lots of difficulties in order to get to the Olympics. You can imagine the effort that he put out. And then the World War came, and it eliminated the Olympics for a good number of years. And he was a bomber pilot, and his plane went down in the Pacific. And he and his survivors were on a raft for about 47 days. And then about the 47th day, they were picked up by the Japanese and put in a POW camp and severely tortured for 2 years. But the story, the heart of the story, is what happened on that raft. Louis had seen himself as an avowed atheist. He was really into being an atheist. This was his point of view. And in the water, suffering as they all did, at some point, just unbeknownst to him. See, we don't know the hidden depths of our soul. We don't know the experience that we've already gone through. But from those hidden depths came a comment that he made. He said, "If you free me, I will serve you." This from the mouth of an atheist in a moment of great trial. "If you free me, I will serve you." And then about 5 days later, they were picked up and put through tremendous torture. And all that Louis did in those years was plot revenge. He forgot, and he plotted revenge. Well, that wasn't going to be a very happy life. And one day, the voice came to him, totally for Louis alone. It said, "You know, you made a promise." I can't tell you how much I love that comment, because that shows you how intimately close and a friend that God is. It's not distant. It's not anything but totally and completely yours. "You know, you made a promise." And Louis was brought to his senses. And when he got out, he devoted his life to spreading the message of Christ. And that is a victorious life. But you can see he did what many of us do. He fought it. Along the way, he said, "I know better. I'm going to get revenge because that was a terrible thing." But it's interesting because in there is another thing to reflect on. And I think we do it so very naturally as human beings. When the bad things come, when the challenges come, we think that along with the challenge is the appropriate emotional response, which we are obliged to give into. But that's not so. When bad things happen, we do not have to fall down and give up. We do not. People say, "Well, you probably feel bad," or our my teacher Swami Kriyananda illustrates this so beautifully in his life. He said he was taking a drive to go skiing at Tahoe, and he was stopped at one point and then had to start up, but he forgot, and it was snowing. It was snowing pretty bad, and the roads were clogged with snow. And he forgot that his tires were bald. And so he started up, and he smacked right into a Greyhound bus. They weren't hurt, folks that were with him. He got on the bus and went up skiing. And the people on the bus said, "Well, why aren't you fussing and fuming here? Why aren't you upset?" He said, "Well, I want to go skiing, and why should I waste the time doing that when, you know, in a week's time, if I let myself go and get all upset, in a week's time, I have adjusted to it. So why not do it right away?" And that's really the truth of it. We don't have to. Our emotions are a whole nother thing. They are very instantaneous, very reactive. But it's not required. It's not required. And so, you know, there is a way in which this bears itself out in experience. For me, I had another moment recently, and it was so superficial, you know, it wasn't a deep moment, but it stuck with me, and I felt it all the way through. I volunteer at a thrift store for Ananda, and we raise money for children's education. And one day it was very windy outside. And also we had some old board games out there. And you know those board games used to be put in very deep boxes with their little boards and then all their little things to move around. And there were always lots of them. And if you didn't keep them together, they'd float around in the box, on top of which the box I picked up was upside down and backwards. And it was cold out there, and the whole thing spilled, and all those little things went out. Well, you know, in a day, if I wasn't paying attention and staying centered, I'd go through it. Oh, my gosh, all that. I didn't do any of that. I just went, oh, and I can still remember how wonderful it was to just stay centered and lean down and pick up every single piece. There must have been 50 of them. And I would find others throughout the afternoon, and it would make me smile to remember that wonderful feeling of being in that temple with God. So, let's see where I want to go with this. So I guess that is my message, is that the game of life is a game of God. And the more we can get out of the way and follow his direction, that happiness and that joy is unalloyed inside, no matter what happens. Thank you.